Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Carol Wolper, author of Anne of Hollywood, and I'm talking to Matthew Spector, Los Angeles CEO of Books, and we're talking about book reviews.
A topic about which there's much to say on all sides.
It's a bit of a taboo topic, apparently. People were saying to me, "Do you really want to say this?" But I do, and this all started over the weekend because Publishers Weekly reviewed my new book and Anne of Hollywood, which is coming out in a couple of weeks. And you're always a bit nervous about what people are going to say. And but in this particular case, it went beyond being nervous, just because it was the book means a lot to me. It was the first review, and when I read it, my first thought was like, "This is crazy," and it inspired what I call my Seinfeld fantasy. And you and I have talked about this, which is Jerry Seinfeld doing stand-up, getting heckled, decides he's going to the next day go down and heckle the person who heckled him. And I think that's every writer's sort of fantasy. Let me review the reviewer.
I should point out that I'm not the reviewer in this case. I'm perfectly happy to be the straw man.
but I am a
reviewer, so yes.
You've been through the same process I have. We both have. And
sure.
By the way, I've also reviewed books, and we've both been on both sides.
Well, that's the interesting conundrum, you know, in that I consider myself foremost a practitioner, you know, insofar as, you know, my first novel came out last year or 2 years ago, and my second novel is coming out later this year. And, you know, I suppose my own identification is as a novelist first and as a critic second or third or even tenth. but you know, in co-founding the Los Angeles Review of Books, you know, obviously I feel very passionate about the state of criticism and about the usefulness of responsible criticism. You know, what book reviews are supposed to do and what they can do for readers and writers alike, and hopefully what they can do is a lot more than make writers feel bad. you know, I think that's not a primary function of good book reviewing, let's put it that way.
You know, when I first read and the review was, you know, 7/8 of it was just a plot synopsis with a sort of dash of meanness thrown in. But when I read it, I thought, you know, this sort of sounds like something a 20-year-old might have written, somebody who took, like, the gig for extra cash but got wasted the night before, so hastily jotted something down the next day. And by the way, if that's the case, I'm fine with that, because at 20 years old, I might have done the same thing. But
sure.
If it's not a 20-year-old doing this, then the question becomes, why should a kind of C-minus quality book synopsis have any impact beyond what a stranger might write on a blog? I mean, what's the distinction?
Yeah,
and, you know,
why
and should
indeed,
one be
you
more
know,
credible than the other?
The things that strangers write on blogs, I mean, you know, there's a tendency, and I think this goes way beyond book reviewing, but, you know, it's a very large part of American culture these days to you know, everything gets crowdsourced and gets you know, or star reviews, right? It doesn't matter, restaurants, you know, everyone's a reviewer on Yelp or on Amazon or on Goodreads. And, you know, there is something you know, troubling about the fact that no matter what you do and no matter how meticulously you do it, there are, you know, people out there who are performing drive-bys on it effectively, you know, I also like to think that only underscores the fact that, you know, criticism can you know, the good criticism is something people still want and still need.
I completely agree. I mean,
yeah.
You know, there have been book reviews I've read, which I sort of liken to watching videos. Every so often there'll be a song, and this was true, you know, 10 years ago more than it's true now, but there'd be a song I would hear, and I wouldn't love it. And then I would see the video, and the visuals made me fall in love with the song. Well, sometimes
sure.
a review can make me fall in love or be curious about a book that I wasn't all that curious about to begin with. And
absolutely.
That kind of criticism is so valuable because it gives you an overview. It's like, this is the world you're stepping into.
Right.
As opposed to the book reviews that, you know, if they were doing Gone with the Wind, they would say Scarlett O'Hara is getting ready for a party and she hopes to see Ashley Wilkes. As opposed
right.
to this book is about the South dying. You know,
right.
very different.
Right. Well, there is that sense. I mean, I think what you just alluded to, you know, the template for existing fiction reviews, especially, it seems to me, you know, if you open up the Sunday New York Times or whatever, there seem to be a lot of reviews that rely so heavily on synopsis. You know, they basically spend, you know, 80% of their time describing the book and then sort of, you know, fling a few adjectives, you know, whether they're superlatives or denigrations at the book. And then, you know, and then they're done. And I think, you know, that's not book reviewing. You know,
well, you just made me think of something. You know that old sort of line, you know, good, fast, and cheap, you can only pick two?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm wondering if part of the reason so many of these reviews are 7/8, you know, 9/10 synopsis description is because that's a faster way to do it. And people are not being paid a lot of money, and this is sort of the business plan that works best for reviewer and company.
That,
I don't know.
That's probably true. There's probably some truth to that. You know, I can't help but think that, you know, if I look back at what the New York Times Book Review used to be, you know, not that I'm trying to slam what it is, but, you know, I look back at, you know, the people who were reviewing for it in the 70s and 80s or, you know, reading old reviews by Anatole Breuard or something. And I think, you know, this guy these people were remarkable writers, you know, people who were actually airing ideas as opposed to judgments, you know, mere judgments of books in print. And you know, I think that you don't find that very often anymore. I mean, you find it in someone like James Wood or something like that, but you rarely see it in mainstream publications ever anymore.
You know, and I really miss that kind of thing. You know, I think about sports writers. You know, there's been some brilliant writing done about sports.
Yes.
In, you know, the sports page of a local newspaper, as opposed to somebody just reporting, well, the Lakers, you know, won the game and Kobe's scored 38 points, you know,
right.
That's the kind of book reviewing we're getting in a way. We're
yeah.
getting sort of the dry facts and we're not getting, you know, a frame of reference for any of the information.
I think that's very true. I mean, I think there's an essential, you know, kind of I sometimes think of book reviewing as being a little bit like travel writing. You know, you're trying to not just, you know, you're not just trying to sum up, you know, go here, don't go there. You're trying to bring some of the texture of the reading experience to life for the person who's reading the review. You know, and you're not imagining that it's a substitution for reading it ever. You know, I just mentioned James Wood, and one of the things that I've always rather liked about him, particularly about his early pieces, is that even when he was being harshly critical of a book, it almost always made me want to read the book. you know, and I actually think, you know, I mean, it certainly, at the very least, it amplified my curiosity about the book, and I think that is, you know, that's really what criticism is for, you know. I mean, it's somehow that the review is not a substitute for reading the book. And it distresses me sometimes when people treat book reviews that way, you know, when they sort of go, well, I read the Sunday Times book review section, you know, so I don't have to read all those books. I'm thinking, good grief, man. You know, that's a depressing consideration, really.
And do you think because, you know, Publishers Weekly, for example, because their reviews are generally the first or among the first, that they have that their reviews have more clout maybe than they should? Is it the timing? You know, my joke about, is it the Iowa caucus?
Right. I'm not sure. You know, I have a, I mean, there's a part of me that thinks that, I mean, it may be that I can't imagine being influenced by PW Review personally, but mm-hmm. I mean, one way or another, I can't, but I, you know, there's some part of me that thinks, you know, books find, you know, I don't think books are ratified or, you know, are made or broken quite the same way that they used to be. You know, I mean, it just seems to me that you know, given the various ways that word of mouth travels these days, I don't think it's so simple as, you know, I can't really imagine that a PW Review is as influential as it used to be. You know, when there were fewer channels and you know, when the media landscape was a little bit more stable.
By the way, 10 years ago when I did my first book and Cigarette Girl and they reviewed it well, I probably loved them, you know, so.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Probably thought they were, you know, my guardian angel or something.
If they reviewed me well with the new novel, I'm sure I'll, they're very influential, you know. What could be more influential? But I'm, you know, I'm really just speculating because I don't know, you know, how influential they are.
You know, as a reviewer, and I've done several for the LA Times, I remember once reviewing Chelsea Handler, actually twice reviewing Chelsea Handler, and her first book, Horizontal Life, I loved. And no one knew who she was at the time, and I just thought she was just this very fresh voice and terrific. And then later on, I reviewed another one of her books, her last one, that I didn't like as much. There were problems for me in that book. Nevertheless, I felt that my job as a reviewer is to give readers a sense of, first of all, what her intent was in writing the book. You know,
sure.
That factors in, but also to remind the reviewer that no matter what my opinion may be of this particular narrative, she's a very funny, smart woman.
Yes.
Let's not take that away. Let's make sure that that's in the review.
Right.
Because I think that's only fair. I mean, that's my guide, is to try and help a reader make a decision about whether or not they want to write the book, not to, as you say, you know, slam it one way or praise it, you know, the other. It's to give it context.
Right, right.
But that takes time,
but,
right?
Yes, it does take time, you know. But then, you know, anything, reading a book takes time. Writing, you know, I mean, it should take time. You know, it's not a foot race, you know, it's really something that you're wanting it to take time, you know, on some level. If you're reading a book, and particularly if you're liking a book, you're asking it to take up your time. so
that's such a great way to put it.
You know, so I think on some sense, you know, in some sense, you know, not that criticism should be long-winded, but I do think, you know, it's somewhat imperative, you know, that you know, to give it, you know, to give it some time, and to give the book some space, you know, by which I don't necessarily mean you know, necessarily length in a review, but I do think that phrase I used a few moments ago, that drive-by quality that a lot of review, you know, you can feel it in the review, you know, it's sort of like, this is the synopsis, and even sometimes with positive reviews, you know, you just get the sense of, well, that's that, you know, and I think, well, it's not at all that, you know, because the book is still there, you know, waiting for someone to pick it up and read it.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, the other thing that I've run into, because I write about women and provocative women and provocative men, but I always feel that, you know, I'm alienating a certain type of female, one who may look at the kind of women I write about as a threat to some extent. And you never know how these things work on a psychological, emotional level. They could just decide, I hate that character, therefore I hate that book.
Sure. Well, you know, the provocateur in me wants to say that if you're not, you know, if you're not alienating somebody, or if you're not risking alienation of somebody, you're probably not doing it right. you know, I you know, it's a good question, you know, because we all have our likes and our dislikes and our allergies. You know, you say, oh, I don't want to read a book about this or that. You know, obviously, you know, it's sort of one of the best experiences you can have as a reader, when you pick something up and you think you're not going to like it, and it blows you away. That to me is the gold standard, you know, where you know, and it happens just often enough where you pick something up and feel like, oh, I don't know, I'll give it a few pages, and then, you know, you're completely transported. You know, that's what reading is for, right? To bring you, kind of to expand upon your interests and bring you into things that you might not have known that you needed to know about. So
that's when the reviewer is your guide. When the reviewer says, see this book that you thought was just about a crazy girl, you know, in L.A., or in my case, you know, Anne Boleyn reinvented for 2012. It's
right.
Really about power and survival.
Right.
And it really is as much as it's got all sort of the sex and the glamour and all that other stuff in it, at its core, it's just a girl trying to survive.
Exactly.
Now, that's what
yeah.
a reviewer can do, but that sort of rarely happens, which also brings me to this question. Who do we think are deciding to, like, write reviews for $25? That's, like, so below minimum wage, right?
Well, yeah, it is, and it's something that, that's something, too, that we grapple with at the LA Review of Books, where we do pay more than $25, but we don't pay as well as we are going to. I mean, we're still fundraising. You know, the plan is to pay, a far stronger rate than we currently do. But you know, it's a good question. You know, the economics of reviewing, and quite honestly, the economics of writing. Both fiction and nonfiction, you know, are again something that's changing so radically. You know, I mean, it seems to me that you know, obviously, as you know, publishers are exploring different models, and you know, whether it's you know, journalists publishing with places like Byliner, or it just seems like people things are a little all over the map at the moment in terms of what writers get paid, what readers pay for a book or an essay, or, you know, all that stuff seems, incredibly volatile. So anyway, you know, the point is, I do think, people, I mean, I have a sense that, you know, when I review, you know, for publication, or, you know, obviously it's nice to get paid, but it's not something I try and rely on as the primary source of my income, because I think there are other reasons and other responsibilities you have as a reviewer than to your bank account.
I agree, and when I've done reviews for the LA Times, I wasn't paid a lot of money, but I was paid a lot more than $25. But
yes. Well, $25. It's funny, you know. I don't know what PW pays their freelancers, but what I found myself thinking about when you were mentioning that was that my own first job when I was in high school was as a reader for a talent agency. I was basically, you know, I had an after school job where they would pay me. It was $50 for a screenplay and $100 for a book. But it was, you know, I would write readers' reports, assessing whether or not they should be movies and how they might be made into movies. And on the one hand, it was a source of both merriment and alarm to me. You know, I felt even at 15, I was a little freaked out, but I thought, you know, these poor adults who are writing these scripts, and they're being judged by someone who's still in high school.
Yeah, this is a frightening scenario.
Nevertheless, might be more interested and educated than the people he's reviewing them for. what struck me was that, you know, there was a time, you know, and then when I graduated from college, I was doing it. I was, you know, reading three scripts a day. And there's a weariness that sets in when you're doing that many. You know, it's not a, you know, I've often just thought, you know, I don't think that's a sustainable job for an adult, you know.
You're right. Yeah, also, it's screenplays, right? You get to the point where you say, I know in the first 10 pages whether or not this is going to work.
Right. But also, you know, imagine being a restaurant reviewer who had to eat at, you know, 5 or 6 different restaurants a day. You would just lose, you know, your palate would be destroyed. You know, you'd be eating when you weren't hungry. I think there's something analogous to that in criticism. People read a lot of, you know, when people try to stack it up and you know, when they're reading for volume, something gets lost. You know, I think books are, you know, are like human beings. They are human beings, you know, in a sense, and we're not supposed to stack up our intimacies quite that closely.
Well, you know, I know it's a cliche, but I feel like, you know, these books are my children. I'm very protective of them.
Sure.
You know, you spend all this time, you know, inside the character's head. So you do become very protective of them. But I think it's interesting because I think it'll be interesting to watch and see how the world of reviewing changes over the next 5 years, because obviously it's going to.
Yeah, it is. And it's nice. It would be nice to say that it's going to, you know, change for the better. And in some ways, I hope it will. I mean, that's why the LA Review of Books exists. And it's why we've gotten such a strong response, I think, out of the gate, is that, you know, people really want thoughtful criticism. But I think, but I also think, as we get more, as we're not getting any less swamped with information, you know what
right.
I mean? Which, you know, it's just, you know, more and more I don't want to, you know, denigrate Goodreads, which I think is a very cool site, but it sometimes startles me, you know, when I am looking for something online and I'll just see, you know, various books and they all seem to have 3.5 star ratings, you know, and I'll think, you know, it's Anna Karenina, you know, it has a 3.5 star rating. It's Anna Karenina.
That is so funny. That sort of sums it up, you know?
Yeah, it does.
It's a one-size-fits-all approach.
Yeah, you know, or just the fact that, you know, if everybody's a reviewer, there are always going to be enough people who hate something,
right?
You know, so so what does it mean, right? So then where do you find your more informed, insightful, information about books and hopefully that means that things will change for the better, because people will start looking, you know, looking for guides that are a little more reliable.
Well, I certainly am. Hey, what's the title of the book
The novel that I have, which will be out at the end of this year, is called American Dream Machine. It's an interesting, speaking of books about Hollywood, stories about Hollywood, it's about a talent agency, of all things.
Really?
And about two talent agents in particular. I feel like there are, you know, it's a long history of books about Hollywood and about the movie business that are very caustic, you know, whether it's, you know, Joan Didion or Nathaniel West. Or more recently, people like Bruce Wagner, who are writing about the business in a sort of sharply critical or satirical way, and it's a business that certainly deserves to be handled with some wit, but I also felt, you know, that does both this city and the people who live here a disservice in literature, so.
I agree with you, and I love this business, and I always say to people, and by the way, I write about L.A., and I can be critical and caustic about it, but I find Hollywood, in a strange way, very forgiving.
It is in some ways. It is certainly as round and complex, a world as any other. And it just seems to me that there was room to treat it a little differently than a lot of books seem to treat it.
That sounds very, very interesting to me, and that's the an arena I'm fascinated by. So I will definitely be looking forward to your book. So anyway, I hope that, by the way, that whoever reviewed my book, $25, and
you hope
having,
you hope
like, a mean moment, they hear this, and that somehow maybe it it impacts their thinking for the next book they're going to review. That's all I can hope
well,
for.
Well, that's a reasonable hope, you know, and I hope they hear it too, and hope they you know hope they take the message to heart.
Matthew, this has been really fun.
Yeah,
chatting
my pleasure.
With you. And you have elevated my spirit, so.
Oh, that's good. That, if I can do that for anyone, but especially a writer with a book that's just out, that just makes my day.
Well, you did that, so I really appreciate it.
All right, great. Okay.
Look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks very much. I'll talk to you
Bye.
Later. Bye.
Okay.
Without a hand to hold, but it's all right. I'm okay. How are you? But what it's worth, I must say, I love you. I'm in my bed late at night. I miss you. Someone is gonna save my heart. No one is gonna break my heart. Everything around me turns to rust. It's 'cause I built my life on sand, and I watched it crumble in the dust. Yeah, but it's alright, I'm okay. I wanna know how you are and what it's. But everything around me turned around. But I know all I have to do is sing. And I lift myself way off the ground. Yeah.